Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Geek Tyrant Weekly Podcast. This is episode number 132. My name is Ben P. I will be hosting this evening. Joining me on the panel are a couple of regulars and a newbie for the first time today. Joining us, we've got Mazer. How's it going, buddy?
Good. I'm coming on this. I found this old hard drive from 2000, so I'm on a bit of a nostalgic kick, just trying to like clear it out, and then I'm going to erase it. But I found like lightsaber test videos I did back in 2000.
Oh, man.
CG models I had done of like Coruscant and like battle droids, trying to recreate the Stargate like wormhole effect. So I'm like, man, this is some crazy stuff I used to do back in the day.
And that's pre-episode 2. So,
yeah.
Man, there was still 2 more Star Wars movies to come out at that point. That seems longer ago than it actually was, but
yeah, 12 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but just to give you some specs on the hard drive, it's only got 12 gigabytes and it's USB 1.0, so it can only transfer, I think, at a peak of like 8 megabits per second. So.
Wow.
Wow.
Mm. Okay. Taking us on a trip down memory lane. All right. Well, Tiberius is also joining us. How's it going?
I'm doing well. For a second, I thought you said you have a doobie lined up for us. I was like, that actually works well because we have a Jay Dubious on here.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. It kind of fits well. No, I'm doing great.
Yeah, newbie, doobie, doozy, any of those things all work, I think. So, yes, Jay Dubious, thanks for coming on for the first time, man. How are you?
I'm great. I'm very happy to be here. I'm a podcast virgin, so this is my first time ever doing one, period.
Oh, so, you are kidding me. Goes.
I'm not kidding you at all.
That is not bad. You sound great. Your microphone sounds decent.
Yeah.
Hey, we're glad to have you on. So, okay. Great, man.
Cool. All right. Well, yeah, we're going to get into a bunch of stuff this week. But first off, as always, let's talk about the box office numbers. I'll just run through the top 5 for you guys really quickly. Number 1 at the box office this past weekend. I mean, today is Wednesday, to be fair. We're recording this on March 7th. So we're talking about the box office for March 2nd through 4th. But number 1 was Dr. Seuss's The Lorax with $70.2 million. We were talking a little bit before we started recording. That seems to be fairly high for a non-summer release. Isn't that what you said, Mazer?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's got, you know, the Dr. Seuss brand on it. But I feel like some of these films have been more missed, like the live-action ones especially. But it feels like, I mean, I think I watched Horton Hears a Who,
mm-hmm.
something like that. And I actually enjoyed that. So, I mean, I don't think I'm going to watch, you know, The Lorax in theaters, but I probably will catch up to it mm-hmm. at some point.
Yeah, Cat in the Hat, this is not. We'll put it
Is it just me, or did they not, like, promote Danny DeVito being in this movie at all that much?
I don't know. I think they did, because I was watching, of all things, The Voice, and they had promos on that show for some reason of Danny DeVito doing singing, which...
Wow.
Yeah, I just, that's all I can say. That's a good reaction. Wow.
Yeah. It's weird because I actually have seen more advertisements for The Lorax in actual movie theaters than anywhere else because they redid the whole like opening thing that they play before a lot of the movies in AMC theaters where it's like, please don't talk, don't text, that kind of thing. And they have like a new one involving The Lorax. So every time I've seen a movie over the past, I don't know, month or two, it's been Danny DeVito staring at me before the film started. So,
Which is not any different than your real life, right?
Right. I mean, he's actually sitting in the corner of my room just staring at me right now. So it's kind of unnerving.
A little creepy there, but okay.
I've gotten used to it over the years. But number 3 of the box office was Act of Valor with $13.6 million. I'm sorry. I skipped number 2. Number 2 is Project X with $21 million. Number 3, which we actually are going to talk about briefly today, is Act of Valor, $13.6 million. Number 4, Safe House, $7.3 million. And number 5, Tyler Perry's Good Deeds at $7.05 million. So that rounds out your top 5 at the box office this week. So getting into a couple of the reviews, there's a few that we just want to touch on briefly. One that I know both Tiberius and myself have seen is Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance, and I realize we haven't recorded in a couple weeks, so this is not, like, the most breaking news reviews or whatever, but has anybody else on the panel seen Ghost Rider?
There's good and bad in all of us. It doesn't matter how far you run. There are some demons you just can't escape.
I have Mazer.
Okay. I've seen the first one. I haven't seen this new movie, though.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see. Tiberius, why don't you start us off? What did you think about this film?
Well, Jay Dubious, don't waste your time. I'm going to say that right now. That's just my opinion. You know, if I had seen this at my home theater, literally in home, I think I might have been more forgiving of it. Now, granted, I went to see this in theaters despite my better judgment and despite my fact of interested in seeing this at all, really. I just wanted to kill some time one evening, and I went to see it, and I was the only one in the theater. I literally had to go out into the lobby and remind the people that I had actually chosen a ticket to see Ghost Rider 2 so that they would start the film. So that's a bad sign right there. And that coupled with the fact that literally the theater was dead as it is. I don't know. It just that and the fact that it was really not a good, it was just not a good movie. Everything about this movie was typical Nicolas Cage, and I've reminded myself never see a Nicolas Cage movie in theaters unless it's something that I know has other actors in it helping him out. Because there's only so much of Cage making crazy, crazy-ass faces that, frankly, anyone should have to sit through. And that's just my opinion. But the action was lackluster. We saw everything we needed to see in trailers, in featurettes, in behind-the-scenes videos, everything that we shared on the site. You pretty much saw the best parts of the movie. Idris Elba, not impressive at all in this role. I was hoping for more, and I don't understand why he even needed a French accent in this movie, but it's completely ridiculous. I mean, he could have been a crazy individual. You know, he could have been his character, but had a nice British. He already has a great accent. Why not capitalize on that? But no, they make him, they push, you know, hey, we think you should do this with a French accent. I'm like, I would not, you know, I guess you don't think my accent's good enough or cool enough, but no, he did it with a French accent. I don't know. And then all of a sudden, Christopher Lambert showing up in the movie. come on. I mean, the Highlander's over.
Where has he been hiding at?
I think in the mountains with the monks that he's in the movie with. Yep. I don't know. Honestly, this whole thing is one, pardon me, cluster mess. If you can get my drift on what I meant to say. It's a cluster, you know what, of a movie. And it really is. Just the part with the pissing fire. Come on. I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
Not even seeing the movie and seeing that part from the clips when he was doing that whole pissing scene, I thought that was a little cheap, you know, a little low down for that type of movie. I don't know why.
Well, Tiberius, that was quite the rant, I must say. I feel like I have to catch my breath after listening to that. But I tend to agree with you on almost all of your points, actually, which is something that's fairly rare these days.
Yeah, whoa!
We should say that this movie is directed by Neville Dean Taylor, which are the guys that brought us the Crank films and Gamer. So it was clear that Sony was trying to go with this really kinetic, kind of crazy style thing by hiring these guys. I mean, a lot of their filmmaking tactics include getting on rollerblades and going through, you know, with handheld cameras and shooting everything digitally. And they've got this very unique style that's pretty much just, like, when you're watching it, you know it's a Neville Dean Taylor movie. So going in, I was like, this mixed with crazy Nicolas Cage as we know him in Ghost Rider, like, might actually have a chance of being kind of a cool combination, but I had heard early buzz and stuff from, I think they played it at Buttonumathon this year, that it wasn't very good, and I still went to see it anyway, and yeah, it just really wasn't good. So I think the biggest thing for a movie like this is to have action that's good and action that matters, and neither one of those are the case here. There really isn't a lot of action in it at all, which I thought was strange. Yeah. I don't know, the whole plot device about the young kid who has the power to change everything just seemed really lazy, and he's got to protect the kid the whole time, so that's always like a pet peeve of mine in watching films. I think Nicolas Cage, like, as far as his performance goes, he's really self-aware. I mean, he was on, I don't know if you guys saw this, he was on Saturday Night Live recently, where it was him and Andy Samberg impersonating him. So that was pretty great. And I think he's very aware of, like, what his perception is to people and how everybody thinks that he's crazy and stuff. But I think that those freak-out moments in Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance almost seem, like, staged or something. Like, they kind of, like, nodded at him from off camera and winked and said, like, yeah, go for it now. And he just kind of, like, went into the, it just didn't feel organic. Like, a lot of times his crazy moments in other movies come from, have this, like, out-of-nowhere sense of insanity and stuff. And this one, it just didn't really have any flow. I was kind of disappointed with Cage, even though he clearly loves his character. I mean, it seems that he is, you know, trying to work to be the sole representation of Ghost Rider on screen. But Mazer, I don't know, what'd you think?
Yeah, I agree with you guys on all your points except for my level of enjoyment of this film, because I just remember the funnest panel for me at Comic-Con was actually these guys talking about Ghost Rider and how ridiculous he is, and just like, well, he's a guy who's on a motorcycle and he's pretty much indestructible. He kills anything in his path. He eats souls. He was given his power by the devil. What are you expecting?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a good point. And even then, it's like, well, I was like, okay, well, you know, I was like, well, before the movie, I did a little research on the Ghost Rider, and I just like was looking through his history, the history of the character, and I was just like, this is all kind of not that amazing. So it's like, it's not like there was this great source material that you had to pull from, and there was like years of, I mean, there's a reason why, you know, no one was, you know, the first Ghost Rider just didn't really click. It's just because like the material itself is really thin, you know.
Yeah.
It's more about the design of this guy with a flaming skull on a motorcycle,
that's which I will say I think was a massive improvement over the first movie. The physical design and stuff, like they had these really cool moments where, first of all, just the flaming skull itself looked a lot better and a lot more realistic, kind of. And then also they had, like, this cool thing where his leather jacket was, like, would pop and melt and stuff like that. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. It just felt like it was a more realized character as opposed to kind of the CG add-on.
Yeah, that's true.
But I love the elements where pretty much anything he touches or rides becomes, like, hell enhanced.
Mm-hmm.
But
I wish there was more of that, though. That one scene where he gets on the giant construction equipment and stuff, I was like, oh, that's really cool, but it lasts all of like 2 minutes, and then there's nothing else really like that for any extended time throughout the movie.
Yeah, it would have been cool if he had, you know, jumped into a hot air balloon or a train or a go-kart,
yeah,
or, you know, a roller coaster ride,
or jumped on the RC back car. Of a dog.
A tricycle? I don't know.
yeah
those would all be. I feel like there was some elements of it that worked in terms of like trying to get that humor out there. I mean, you guys talked about the flaming pee,
mm-hmm.
but like they cut away to that. But it would have been cool to see that in a sequence where it made sense that he was peeing fire,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just a cutaway.
Yeah.
But
well, here's a question I have for you all that's seen it. Do they tie into any of the rest of the Marvel universe at all? Because it almost seems like Marvel doesn't give a crap about this movie.
No, not at all.
The black sheep of the Marvel universe, it seems
not
like
at all.
No, yeah. I don't know if you guys noticed, but during the opening credits, like when they normally show the Marvel logo, they actually showed something different. So it said Marvel Knights, and that's like a separate banner that Marvel's got for these kind of lower tier, maybe a little harder edge characters. I didn't see Punisher Warzone, but apparently that was the first movie to carry that Marvel Knights banner. So they've got that. And yeah, I mean, it kind of does seem like Marvel doesn't care too much, because they really shouldn't. It's kind of a Sony property until the rights revert back to Marvel, and then who knows what they'll end up doing with that character. Same thing with Spider-Man and Fantastic Four and Daredevil and some of these other ones that are like floating around outside to other studios. But
yeah, I'm thinking, just like, if you know the directors and what the movies they've done, and you know the character Ghost Rider, I think it was actually a pretty good film for who made it and what the material was. So I'm not sure how else you could improve Ghost Rider.
Yeah, maybe a lot of the problems that I have with it are like with the character himself.
Yeah.
But yeah. All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on.
Maybe Ghost Rider in Hell.
Wow.
Interesting. Yeah. To see.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean,
interesting.
You did get the powers from the devil, might as well.
Yeah.
So did anybody see Project X over the weekend?
Is this big enough to be cool?
Drinks for the birthday boy right now?
Casa, what are you doing?
Replying.
I want your ass too, mommy. Who talks like that?
I do. It works.
There's a little guy in the oven.
Think about it. Our balls are where his eyes are.
Don't do it, man. You're way too fat.
Shut up.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. I did.
I did not.
I actually saw it. Well, I think, you know, this is all I can say about this movie. You know what you're getting going into it. You don't have any surprises with it. It's going to be, you know, everything that we showed on GeekTyrant.com, you know, about the film itself, about, you know, what, you know, any videos behind the scene, trailers, all that kind of good stuff that we shared, really was pretty straightforward. You know what you're getting with this movie. You know what you're going into. And it was kind of cool to see what these three guys that are pretty much losers at their school change their social status completely with one night. And in all honesty, I, you know, it was a lot of fun to watch, just because of the fact that I could live vicariously through these three guys,
mm-hmm.
and watch them tear stuff up that goes beyond anything that I could ever imagine doing in my personal life.
Yeah.
And seeing that unfold on screen, to me, just like, you know, it's well worth it just for that, you know.
Yeah, it seems total escapism, you know.
It is escapism. And that movie, just to point out, that movie made it was shot for $12 million and has made over $21 million just on the first weekend. So you can understand why a sequel has already been kind of, you know, is already in the works. You know, I don't know. I really had a lot of fun with watching it, and my wife enjoyed it too. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, stuff was out there, but you know, hey, I liked it. I liked it.
What do you make of the claims that the movie is like misogynistic and treats women really poorly and stuff? I haven't seen the film, obviously, but I've been hearing some backlash over Twitter and stuff.
I don't care about that kind of stuff. Maybe I'm not politically correct, so I really don't care.
Okay, interesting.
You know, I'm a guy, so that's me. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, ladies, but that's just, you know, I don't know. That's how I am. So I'm not gonna beat around the bush with that. So
interesting. Okay. Anybody else have any Project X questions or thoughts or anything?
I'm just wondering, how are they going to be able to make a sequel off of it? Because from what I'm hearing from what you describe it, did they leave it? Leave room for that at the end of the movie for a sequel, or?
You know, it's actually kind of funny that people. This is nothing crazy or anything out there. This is actually something that happened in Australia, a similar, very similar situation. Now, granted, not the extra stuff that really happened. If you guys have heard of what happens at the end of the movie, which I'm not going to spoil anything for you, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, you guys, most people might know about it, but basically, there's just something that actually happens at the end of the movie that didn't happen in real life, but. There was a party in Australia, an Australian teenager had a house party, and through social media, the party blew up, and the riot police had to be called in.
I remember hearing about that because the kid was like interviewed on the local news and like had this really crazy attitude, and that video went viral of him being interviewed. That was really funny.
They made shirts of that. Let's just say that much. I mean, he had shirts made up. I saw on like somewhere like Busted Tees or something, you know, of him, you know, she was like saying, and the exact same kind of thing happens at the end of the movie with a video interview with a local, you know what I mean? A local news interview. So it's, you know, I mean, and the fact that, you know, in real life, that kid actually was offered jobs to party to promote parties.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, I mean, because honestly, literally, I can't remember the exact number, but like over 10,000 people showed up at this party in real life.
That's absurd.
It's insane. It is absurd. So, I mean, the neighborhood, not only was his house trashed, but the entire neighborhood was trashed.
Yeah.
So... I don't know. I can definitely see a sequel coming down the road, you know, and I could see it happening. Maybe they become professional party planners.
Yeah, hopefully that kid
show what they do.
Maybe that kid will be involved in some capacity with the sequel. That'd be pretty
That would be interesting. That'd be interesting.
Cool. Well, there's two more movies that came out relatively recently that I'll just run through that I saw that I don't think anybody else did. But correct me if I'm wrong, guys, if anybody else had a chance to see Act of Valor. I think our esteemed leader, Dr. Venkman, saw it, but he's not with us tonight.
You don't expect your family to understand what you're doing. You just hope they'll accept it.
I'm so excited for you, man. You're going to be a good dad.
And when you get home, you hope you can pick up right where you left off.
3, 2, 1.
All clear!
Target secure!
This is a personnel recovery. Proceed to target, recover the package, and move to extract.
Got it.
This is the starring active duty U.S. Navy SEALs movie inspired by true events. Film that it's doing pretty well at the box office, and it has a writer. It's the same guy who wrote 300 and the upcoming Man of Steel movies, but everything about this movie actually happened. I saw it at a Q&A a couple months ago with the directors, and they came out and explained before the movie started, look, listen, every single thing that you're about to see in this movie actually happened in one way or another. Wow. Like, maybe not in this particular order that was everything was constructed in to form like a cohesive narrative throughout the thing, but every individual instance actually happened to these guys, and that is kind of mind-blowing when you're watching the movie, because so much of it is like standard action movie stuff, but when you look at it through that lens of like, holy crap, real guys actually deal with this stuff on a daily basis, like this is their life.
Oh, yeah.
It takes on a whole new meaning, and I think it elevates the film, because I think if you take that away and just have it like, okay, this is just a normal movie with normal actors or whatever, the movie wouldn't really be that great. But watching it through that prism and through that lens, it elevates the movie a little bit, and I think, you know, anybody who, if you're an American watching this movie, you're going to have one of those like America, F yeah moments, you know, in my review, I wrote it up at Geek Tyrant. I said that it's modern propaganda and that's okay. Like, as long as you know that that's what this movie is going into it, then I think it's okay that, it is that. You know what I mean? Like, as long as they're not trying to manipulate you or really kind of subvert anything or get anything in there, like, subliminally or whatever, it's very, like, on the surface. This is what this is. The movie itself actually was supposed to be a training video for the Navy, but then they ended up shifting the concept over to a documentary, and then they moved it into a narrative after that. So, I mean, there was a lot of involvement from the government and stuff. So it's very, like, the Navy SEALs themselves actually plotted out all of the strategy of all of the action moves, the sequencing and stuff like that in the film itself. Like, whenever they approach a building and, like, go into it and move around and everything, those guys actually worked it all out, all these combat situations, as they would in real life, and that's how it was filmed. So there's so much in this movie that's really unique. It's the first film since the 1920s that actually uses live ammunition on set. Most of the time people use blanks and stuff, but these guys were using real bullets.
Wow.
Not for every single shot, obviously, because people do get shot, and that didn't happen in real life. But, you know, there's they're trying. They really went that extra mile to make it as realistic as possible. So with all that said, the acting is terrible because these guys are real-life Navy SEALs. They're not actors. I mean, it's distractingly bad, like really, really, really terrible. Luckily, the movie doesn't really require them to show a lot of emotion because it kind of relies mostly on the action just to get through the story. But there's a lot of, like, first-person POV shots and stuff, and a lot of parallels you could draw to video games like, you know, Medal of Honor and Call of Duty and all that kind of stuff, which really, again, serves two purposes. One, video games are looking really damn good these days, and then the other is, like, wow, these guys actually go through this stuff, and it's pretty freaking impressive what they have to do. So overall, I think it's more of like an interesting experiment than a good movie. If you're willing to kind of overlook the bad acting in a pretty run-of-the-mill storyline, then I think, you know, it's worth checking out. There's some cool action scenes and stuff like that, but it's not a game changer, I wouldn't say. But do you guys have any interest in seeing this, or is this one you're just kind of like waiting for video release or what?
I'm very interested.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was very interested in seeing it, but my main question was, like, if it's really active duty people, weren't they supposed to, like, keep the Navy SEALs' identities secret?
I don't know if it's. I don't think it's like the knock list, like Mission Impossible or anything, where they're like you know, it's like straight up secrecy all over the place. I think it's fine. They don't really give away any, like, massive U.S. like overarching government secrets or anything like that.
Right.
It's all, like, pretty standard. Honestly, it's like everything you see in here, you've pretty much seen before in any military-related video game, the way they handle situations and scenarios and stuff. So it's really like if you know, you're worried about, like, terrorists taking this movie and using it as an example for, like, how to get around our tactics or whatever, as if they have access to an Xbox, then they could have done that. So
playing Call of Duty multiplayer potting now.
Well, what I was going to say is that I don't think that these guys are on what's known as SEAL Team 6, the top elite of the SEAL team, the Navy SEALs. That's from what I know, because SEAL Team 6 is the guys that are, you know, going to do things like what happened with Osama bin Laden and things of that nature. So these aren't, and those guys, you know, because if you haven't noticed on in any news reports, they don't really give away the names of that team. Rightly so, because those guys are out in the field and doing whatnot. That's from my basic knowledge of how things operate, but I could be wrong. So, you know, but it's pretty cool to see. I want to see this when it comes on DVD. So, yeah, I'm going to see it on DVD.
Yep. Cool. And then one other one that I had a chance to see was Wanderlust.
As soon as we can get back on our feet, we'll come back to New York. But right now, my brother's offering me a job, and Atlanta's the best place for us to be.
Brother, where's your cardboard box? And Linda, oh my God.
Ah, your body is ridiculous.
Rick, I think you're making everybody uncomfortable.
Oh, everybody knows what I mean.
The new film from David Wayne, who wrote, or maybe co-wrote, and directed Wet Hot American Summer. Are you guys familiar with Wet Hot or David Wayne or any of that kind of his previous work at all?
Do you guys... I'm familiar with Wet Hot American Summer, but I've never seen it.
Oh, okay.
Never seen it.
Yeah, well, we talked about it on an episode of the Not Just the Movies podcast, hint, hint, if you guys want to check out that episode, not too long ago. I had never seen it either. That was my first viewing, and I would recommend, instead of seeing Wanderlust, go watch Wet Hot American Summer. I'm pretty sure, I'll check this right now, but I think it's available on Netflix Watch Instantly. It was a few months ago.
I don't think it is.
Oh, no? Not anymore? Okay.
I'll check it. I'll check it now, though. Go ahead and keep going.
So,
keep talking, and I'll check.
Oh, I'm looking right now. Yeah, it's there. It's available streaming on Netflix. So, yeah, check that one out instead. Don't see this. If you've seen Role Models, that's another one that David Wayne directed. I also would recommend watching Role Models instead of Wanderlust. Vince Mancini over at Film Drunk wrote an article before the movie came out wondering if Wanderlust would be more of a Paul Rudd, David Wayne movie or more of a Jennifer Aniston movie. And it's kind of like a depressing mixture of the two because Paul Rudd and David Wayne and these guys have such a unique sense of humor. But in Wanderlust, it's really filtered through studio sensibilities and it's kind of watered down a little bit. I was really disappointed with it, especially in comparison to something like Wet Hot American Summer, which is just like pretty much their vision straight through. Like, you can tell studios didn't really interfere with that movie. It was so small scale that they just didn't really care what's going on, and that's part of the reason why it's become a big cult classic. Jennifer Aniston, that being said, is not like the devil incarnate or anything like that, especially not in this movie. She was actually better in this film than in a lot of stuff that I've seen her in recently. I heard she was decent in Horrible Bosses. I didn't see that, so...
Yeah, she was.
Okay, good. So, yeah, I mean, maybe she's getting better or something. I don't really know. And Paul Rudd was fine. The cast was good. You've got, Joe Latrullio, Justin Theroux, Alan Alda makes an appearance. And, there's Ken Marino is really, really funny in it. And he's in Party Down, if you guys saw that series on Stars. So there's a lot of talent here. The whole thing just seems a little kind of... what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know, like a little not castrated, but cut off, like, to a degree where you can tell that they're being censored a little bit. This isn't the pure, unfiltered version of what they wanted to do. So I think maybe, if anything, check out like an unrated director's cut or something like that once this movie hits DVD and Blu-ray, because that I feel like would have even the slight changes that would be on something like that would be a huge improvement on this film. So that's Wanderlust. Okay. There's not really a ton to get into there, but again, I highly recommend checking out Wet Hot American Summer and Role Models instead of this movie. So if you guys get a chance to do that, do it.
Well, Ben, I've already added it to my instant queue, so thank you.
There you go. Yeah, no problem. All right, so let's move on into some geek news for a little bit, shall we? Brief update on Cloverfield 2. First of all, has everyone here seen Cloverfield?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, and I love Cloverfield.
Does everyone here want to see a Cloverfield 2? That's a question.
I've wanted to see one since the first one ended. I've been wanting to see.
Okay.
Maybe. I get motion sick, so.
Okay.
If they were telling the story from a professional crew, so the camera isn't terribly shaky. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But,
no, I think once Cloverfield came out, there was rumors like, oh, we're gonna get the military perspective from this. And I was like, oh,
what I'd heard too.
That'd be amazing. But like, do we even know what the Cloverfield 2? Do we know more details?
Well, we don't. Not really. We just know that Drew Goddard, the guy who wrote the first Cloverfield, is down for another one. He's doing press rounds right now for Cabin in the Woods, the new movie that he and Joss Whedon are involved with. That looks really fantastic. And somebody asked him about Cloverfield 2, and he's like, I'm in, I'm ready to do it. Somebody call J.J. Abrams and tell him to get moving, because Matt Reeves and J.J. Abrams and I have been fortunate enough to be busy. It's hard syncing our schedules up. We're were all very passionate about returning to that world. And then somebody asked him if they wanted to do the found footage thing again. And he said, if you asked each of us what we wanted to do, you'll get three different answers, which is how the first film was. The aesthetic of Cloverfield benefits from that, three voices pulling it. And then in another interview, he said something like, if you would have asked me a year ago, I would have said absolutely yes, it had to be found footage, but now I'm not so sure, or something like that. So I thought it was interesting that he, like, just thinking about what a Cloverfield movie would look like that wasn't shaky and handheld and stuff, kind of like what you're talking about, Mazur, if that's, like, so, because it was so inherent to the storytelling the first time around. I mean, the first Cloverfield came out in 2008. It kind of beat a lot of these found footage handheld movies. This new wave that we're experiencing right now kind of beat all those to the punch in a way, and that whole novelty of it felt really fresh at the time. So they're wondering if they can approach this sequel, if they ever get around to doing it, with some other stylistic choice that feels just as fresh to audiences today. So I don't know. I mean, I'm with you guys, and I heard about the concept about the sequel, with them wanting to do it from a different perspective but tell the same story, same events and stuff, and then, like, I think there was talk about them briefly crossing over and just, like, showing HUD and the rest of those guys in, like, a quick shot with the new camera, and then that would be the only piece of connective tissue between the two films. I thought that was a really cool idea. And there's nothing in these updates that would suggest that they're not going to do that, but there's also nothing in the updates that suggests that they are going to do that. So, I don't know. Jay Dubious, what do you think? Are you interested in a sequel?
Regardless if they do the whole, you know, shaky cam film shooting of it, I just want them to show more about the monster. Where the hell did this thing come from? Yep. Why is it here? You know, get more into that, because I did feel a little ripped off by the end of the first one. Don't get me wrong, I liked the first movie, but once I got to that, I was like, that's it? That's all I get to see? Like, I wanted more instantly.
Yeah.
So if we get some more of that, I'll be great. Well, I'd be great with it. But, you know, it also reminds me a lot of that movie Battle of Los Angeles with Aaron Eckhart, because, you know, that had a little bit of that whole, you know, found footage type stuff mixing with, like, regular, you know, film shooting of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that at least showed both sides. You know, why did they come here a little bit, and showed, you know, the military side as well. So I could see it going in that direction as well. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And kind of like District 9 also had, like, started out as, like, a straight documentary and then just moved into, like, a you know, a balls out action movie by the end of it. So
exactly.
Yeah.
I think there could be a way to do both, is, like, you have the POV from the guys on the ground, because all, you know, all the soldiers are linked up with cameras nowadays, and you have a tactical command.
Yeah.
Yep. So you could see the tactical command, and the movie plays out, you know, with the regular movie style, but because of the tactical command, you can kind of go into people's POVs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's the
way to go.
That's an interesting concept. You know, Mazur, how were you for Chronicle? Did you see that in theaters?
I think the last time you had the podcast, we talked.
I
about
thought
that.
We did. I couldn't recall.
I enjoyed
Sorry.
It up until the end, where it started to get questionable. And I think I threw out the suggestion of why not go the route of District 9, where it starts off that way, but at the end, it's pretty much a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I just was curious. My main question for you was, did that affect your motion sickness for that film at
Actually,
all?
Chronicle didn't affect me, because a lot of the stuff ended up where he was, you know, controlling the camera. So it ended up being a lot smoother. But, yeah, I get motion sick looking at a Ferris wheel or merry-go-round.
Okay.
So that's my level. So, yeah, I think if...
Gotcha.
Chronicle was the right balance. Cloverfield was overkill. I think if they had POV stuff and intercut with stuff, let someone's eye breathe, then it would work.
So, yeah, Mazur, I knew I heard that District 9 thing somewhere, or had that planted in my subconscious somewhere, and it was the last time that we talked. That's you incepted that into my brain. But all right, well, let's move on a little bit. Ethan Coen, I'm pretty sure it's how you pronounce his name. It's not Ethan Coen, the Coen brothers. It's Ethan Coen, the screenwriter of Tropic Thunder, is looking to make his directorial debut on a movie for Paramount called Boy Scouts vs. Zombies. No, that is not a joke. That is a real movie that's actually happening. The movie will focus on a Boy Scout troop that has to save a group of Girl Scouts from a horde of zombies with designs on spoiling a camping trip. Guys, would you see a movie called Boy Scouts vs. Zombies? Are you interested in such a thing?
I think it could be. I think it could be pretty funny.
Yes,
as long as they approached it from the angle of humor. If you have potentially, you know, I mean, I don't know how many kids are in a troop. Let's say 8.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a potential to have somewhere between, you know, a couple kids who are Ash-like characters, get a couple kids who are, you know, pull those characters out of Shaun of the Dead, pull some characters out of Attack the Block, The Goonies, and then you could have an interesting film. As long as the zombies are interesting, because I feel like the zombies could kind of, you know, with these prepared scouts and their ingenuity, might not be really that much of a challenge.
Yeah.
I feel like there might have to be an extra element to a Boy Scout and zombie movie. But it seems like they could, you know, think their way out of this situation pretty intelligently in a humorous film. So.
Yeah, and I feel like Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts learn some of the same things. I was never involved with, I guess, either organization. But I'm kind of predicting something where the movie is supposed to be about the guys saving the girls, but since they know a lot of the same skills, I'm guessing the girls are going to be just as capable, maybe more so than the guys are. I can see that being kind of like a funny twist or something at the end. So, I think if they get a really great young cast together, and if the script is really, really funny, then it would be worthwhile. It's just hard to look past the title as like, oh, Hollywood executives greenlighting a movie based on buzzwords alone, you know? Anything versus, anything zombies, it's like, oh, God, just roll your eyes at it. But, yeah, I think there's a tiny bit of hope for this one.
You know, just for giggles, let's just go ahead and take Shane out of Walking Dead and have him come into this, and maybe he'll sacrifice some Boy Scouts for his own life. I don't know.
You know, they should get the two boys from Modern Family.
Oh yeah,
that'd be a good idea. That'd be funny. That would be funny. I'd like to see this movie just because I love anything. I'm a zombie fan.
Anything endangering children. You're just cool.
yeah, no, exactly. And the idea of them endangering children really sets me over the top. So.
Nice.
No.
All right.
I'm
well,
I just don't know if I want to see this one.
Yeah. Well, Mazer and Tiberius, maybe you guys can walk me through this one. I'm not too sure about Apple products in general. I'm more of a PC user myself, but apparently Apple has unveiled a new iPad today.
Yeah, it's only being called the new iPad. It's not even iPad 3. It's not iPad HD. Yeah. It's the new iPad.
Well, that's lame.
And confusing. I think what they're trying to do is get away from the they're trying to get away from the number system like they did with the iPod.
Yeah.
Because think back, you know, 2 years ago, what was the last iPod called?
iPod. I don't know.
It was just the newest iPod, right?
Oh.
So right. I think they're trying to get away from the numbers. That way people are thinking about the product as an experience as opposed to the newest, you know, iPad, LTE, 4G. I mean, I think there was a Verizon commercial that spoofed all the Android devices that are out there.
Yeah.
I think there's a bit of like fatigue over all these letters and numbers, and you just want the newest one. So
yeah. And what it's got like a better high definition screen or something, right?
Well, that's the thing, is like it's got what's called a Retina display, and the screen it has. I mean, if you guys know what with cameras, you measure things in megapixels. So it actually has 1 million more pixels than 1080p. Mm. So you could watch a 1080p movie and have room for the controls. So, I mean, that's how much resolution's in there. In terms of performance and horsepower, I believe the guys at Epic Games described it as having more horsepower than an Xbox 360.
Mm.
And it has a larger screen than what you can have on your own TV. So there's a huge potential. I mean, the other game, I mean, this is killing the probably killing the 3DS. And, you know, I myself, with my first-gen iPad, I use it mostly for games, really. So,
really?
Yeah. I mean, I do type stuff on it, and I do surf the net and stuff, but, like, there's a lot of fun games on it. And it's just a bright size, and it's way easier than, like, sitting at your computer or having it on a laptop. It's a lot more personal, so you can just kind of take it wherever, so.
I want to ask this. There's been a lot of talk. I read a CNET article tonight, and I searched around on the Apple Store today, and just kind of looking at different things about it. And they have a nice comparison on there, just to compare the iPod 2 versus the new iPod. So it just kind of gives an idea. If you haven't checked that out, check that out too. But also go to GeekTyrant.com for our specs breakdown. I think, didn't we post that earlier today?
Yeah. It was posted on Game Tire as well. It's interesting is they're so far ahead in terms of performance. Like the fastest graphics processor you can get for an Android tablet is I forgot what it's called, but they use that as the baseline, and the iPad, the new iPad, is four times faster in terms of graphics performance.
Mm.
So but with all the stuff that they released, so they released iPhoto that looks like Apple's Aperture. I mean, you have Photoshop on the iPad now. Hmm. You have Autodesk is coming out with these other great apps. So it's going to get to the point where, like, some people, I mean, thanks to iCloud, there might be a point where a lot of people might just go, all right, iPad, I don't even need extra storage because I can just delete and re-download stuff. If I want, I can put stuff into a Dropbox. You know, I mean, there's all sorts of ways to almost, I mean, Apple keeps pushing this post-PC thing, but they're really setting up everything to be able to actually do it.
Interesting.
That's what I was going to say, because the article that I read was talking about how close we're getting, if not already there, depending on your needs, to this literally being a replacement potentially to another computer. I mean, it's a replacement to I mean, yeah, you can have a desktop or you know, or whatever, but it might be, this could be truly replace your laptop.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, that's what I think.
I think, you know, it was a couple of years ago, but Steve Jobs described these devices as a device for everyone, kind of like a car. There's still going to be PCs and Macs that, you know, have Windows and all that kind of stuff, but he described it as more as like trucks. And there's very few people who really need and have practical uses for trucks. They're, you know, they make them, but there aren't too many of them. So.
Yeah, Jay Dubious, what do you think?
I wasn't too floored with the new iPad. I mean, yeah, it has, you know, better graphic processor, better Pentium chip, and I forgot what kind of chip is in there.
It's an A5.
A5, right? Yeah, it has better stuff in there, but I still have a generation one, and I don't really feel the need to upgrade to this new one yet. But with that said, if anybody still wants to get the iPad 2, they are selling the refurbished ones in store right now for $350. So you can still get that right now, or you could just get a brand new iPad 2 for about $400. So it's whatever. But I'm not floored with you. I needed something bigger in this release. I don't know. It wasn't doing it for me.
Now, have you guys held an iPhone 4 or an iPhone 4S?
I have an iPhone 4.
Okay. So that jump in resolution, was that impressive to you?
The jump in resolution and the speed of the phone alone was enough of a reason for me to buy it. Because before that, I didn't even have the 3GS before that. I had the 3G. So from going from the 3G to the iPhone 4, I mean, it was like night and day.
Okay.
So I could totally see where the iPad 1 and this one, you know, it probably is totally different. But just like you, I mainly use it maybe for gaming. I use it for, you know, surfing the web or checking email or going through my Google Reader, and that's about it. Yeah. At one point, I was thinking about getting a new laptop, but this replaced that for me. The only reason I even have a desktop computer right now is really just for making graphics and video editing and, of course, PC games. So,
yeah.
So do you have a PC, the iPad if I may ask?
Say that?
Do you have a PC? I cut you off. I'm sorry. Do you have a PC or do you have an Apple product as your desktop?
I have a PC as my desktop.
Okay. So do I. This is funny. I'm talking from even the outside. Ben, don't feel too bad because I only own an iPod Classic. I don't even own an iPad.
Okay.
So, you know, don't feel like you're out of the loop because I look at things from the exterior. Now, I also wanted to point out, this does kill a lot of blows away Android products in terms of the tablet. Definitely. But one thing I want to point out, I'm really happy, you know, in terms of iPhone 4. Now, for my needs, I have a Google Nexus S on the Sprint network, and I'm very happy with that. If I were to upgrade, it would probably be to an iPhone 4 or 4S. So there you go. I just wanted to throw that out there.
I think there's just so many more apps. You know, I mean, like they sold, 325 million devices last year?
Exactly. Yeah.
Like when you're a developer and you're thinking about which device should I develop for, the one that just did 325 million devices in a single year versus Android, which has probably more devices but has not a unified store and not a unified platform. So, I mean, developers are not shy in saying developing for Android is hard.
Yeah, I think Google is doing what they can to try to like bring that into a one unified thing, but it's going to take a little while, and they're way behind as far as having that kind of a unified front and stuff like that. So,
the purchase of Motorola is really going to do that for them.
Okay,
true.
One thing I wanted to point out though, before we go too far, Ben, if I may, just to answer this. If in case you hadn't noticed this, Ben, because I know you have an Android and I have an Android, if you haven't noticed for Android users out there, they are doing some answering of that in terms of the Android market has now become Google Play.
Right.
So the Google Music has changed over to Google Play Music. The Books has changed over from Google Books to Google Play Books. And the Android market is now no longer Android market. Even though it is a market, it's now Google Play. So I think, and I don't know, this is the problem. The main problem with Android products is that there's so many different types of products, and it is so hard for developers to do. But I'm wondering if this is a step in the right direction for Google in terms of their, solidifying their marketplace.
Yeah, it totally is. That's actually exactly what I was referring to, but I just couldn't remember the name of what everything just changed to. So thank you for that. Google Play. Yeah. That's what I was looking for. So yeah, I think it totally is a step in the right direction for them. But yeah, it's just going to take them a while to catch up with Apple because they're so advanced in those categories. But so let's briefly just talk, kind of brush over this one really quickly. Netflix apparently is in discussions. Reed Hastings, the CEO of Netflix, is in discussions with a couple different cable companies to maybe take Netflix to like turn it into a cable service.
No, I'll very good question. Very good point. There wasn't too much information in the article from The Hollywood Reporter that I utilized as my source material. But basically, from what I understand, if you guys haven't heard about this, cable companies across the country are constantly having to worry about their subscribers jumping ship and just using streaming services like Hulu Plus, Netflix Instant, things of that nature, Amazon Instant Video. And as well as Redbox for all of their entertainment needs. Plus, there's so much, plus movie theaters. There's so many different choices out there that people can have. Plus, like we just mentioned, Google Play. You can watch movies or read books, but more movie-wise, you could watch movies directly on your phone. So, and Netflix is always in major competition with cable providers. Well, lately Netflix has had kind of a rough year, obviously with their missteps in terms of you know, the streaming only, the, you know, I don't, everything that they've been going on, everything that that's been going
on. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't even want to mention that. Quickster, completely the biggest mistake ever made.
Yeah,
in terms
that's fine.
Of,
we can skip that.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, the point being, Reed Hastings has been meeting with undisclosed cable companies to try to offer Netflix as part of an option for current cable subscribers. You know, HBO has HBO Go, but Showtime and other stuff, you know, yeah, I don't think it's with the cable networks. It's more with, Optimum Online or Comcast or, you know, the various ones that there are throughout the country, whatever your area might be. You know, they have probably met with one, if not two. They said, I believe, two. But, you know, by the end of this year, there could be, you know, it could be partnered with a cable company so that it's part of your cable package. So it just could benefit current subscribers. I myself have not been with had a premium. I find no need to personally keep an HBO premium anymore. Even though I love all of the HBO shows, I just couldn't afford it anymore. So, yeah. You know, there you go.
Yeah, it's just interesting that Netflix is considering moving into the TV realm, especially considering they're developing their own original programming now. You know, you've got David Fincher's House of Cards TV show that they're working on. Story just came out today where Fincher is kind of butting heads with people at Media Rights Capital, the company that's financing that show, because he wants more money for it, and he might threatening to walk away from the project. So you've got that. You've got Lilyhammer, Netflix's other original show that's already streaming right now. You've got the impending new release of new Arrested Development episodes and the movie that's coming up with that too. So it seems like Netflix is just expanding a little bit and looking to stay relevant, really. So I can't really fault them for that.
Well, I think they're trying to just own the whole product, because right now it's like the studios pull stuff and it's like, oh, well, now we don't have content. So in a sense, they're protecting themselves by being a, you know, a content creator.
Yeah, totally.
Going the route of HBO.
Yep.
I mean, HBO would love to cut out the cable providers, but they get lots of extra money and they have a solid distribution channel.
Yep.
So, I mean, it could work out that way.
Cool.
What is funny to me about it, though, is that you have Netflix partnering with companies or with studios like the Weinsteins, and doing, you know, the artist is going to be going on to Netflix, even bypassing cable. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of interesting that in other forms of distribution. So, and then there's other movies that go directly on day and date of DVD release to that.
Yeah.
So, interesting stuff.
Cool. Yeah, man, we are running the gamut here. We're talking movies, we're talking tech, we're talking TV. So now let's move over into the video game realm. Jay Dubious, this is more of your territory here. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the Assassin's Creed 3 trailer that just came out recently.
Well, this was like the really big story ever since last week when images got leaked out from somebody. I forgot actually who it was, but it was like images of, you see the main character holding up the hatchet going to town on somebody, and everybody's like, oh my god, is this for real, is this fake, is this a new one, how's this is different from the previous timelines. And then next thing you know, Ubisoft actually released the game covers by the end of the week last week. So I'm almost one to think that this is all like a planned PR exposure game at this point. Because on top of that, right after they released the game covers, then you see Game Informer magazine, they already had game covers or magazine covers made up for it.
Ah.
So it was already like, you know, well thought out. But Monday, the actual trailer came out and a lot of new details for the game was released. The main thing they want to get across to people is that this game is not just for the older vets that played all the previous Assassin's Creed games. This is also for new players that could jump right in. So you don't really have to know all the previous storylines. Even though they do tie into this game somewhat, it is a different character. His name is Connor. I can't pronounce his last name. It's Rondun Hagedu. Wow. Try saying that three times fast. Yeah.
That's pretty good, man.
But he had an English father and a Native American mother was raised by the Mohawk tribe who clashed with the white colonists, and they burned his village down. And he turned over to tyranny, and now he's like all, you know, out for vengeance basically. And they're going to put you in like a combat system that's going to have you on the offensive, and it's going to be a lot based on your momentum in the game. Like if you're running up, that force of you running up is going to really play into how you attack enemies. What's also pretty cool, you go to interact with characters like George Washington and Benjamin Franklin. Like, these are people that you're actually going to talk to in the game. If you look at the trailer, you actually see George Washington talking at the end of the trailer.
Yeah, so for people who may not be, like, totally familiar with the series and stuff, most of the earlier games took place during, like, the Renaissance and stuff, and this one's actually taking place during the American Revolution, right?
Totally different, right. This is between the years of 1753 and 1783. It's basically going to take place in Boston and New York, do some big events that happen in those times. And he, like I said earlier, he's going to have a tomahawk this time. And I'm not sure he's going to still have the blade or if this character's going to have the blade like the previous characters, but the tomahawk is going to be the main weapon of choice. And he's also going to, you know, kill animals and use them for like skin hides and food and everything. So yeah. It should be a fun game. I think for somebody looking to get into the franchise, this is a good point to get into it. And that's coming out on October 31st.
Cool. Yeah, I watched the trailer, and it reminded me a lot of the Mel Gibson movie, The Patriot. Did you get that vibe, too?
Definitely, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit of Last of the Mohicans mixed in there.
Mm-hmm.
And
nice.
With all the Survivor stuff, I was, in terms of gameplay, I was just thinking of like Metal Gear Solid, like Snake Eater.
Right. It's worth noting that they're going up against some strict competition. Like the week before that, Medal of Honor Warfighter that was just recently announced is coming out the week right before that. So gamers are going to have a big choice to pick, you know, what's going to take up their time for that, you know, couple months or whatever.
Yeah, gaming is such a cutthroat thing when games cost like $60 a piece. It's like, man, if people like just for the average kind of everyday gamer, that really is a huge choice because people don't have the money to be able to afford to throw down for both of them.
Amen to that.
Yeah, with the graphics, and I mean, these games are costing more just because it takes so much more in terms of work just to get the graphics to be created. Like, the teams have literally had to double in size to be able to produce these new games. So when there's the next generation, who knows how many more people have to be involved.
I'm glad you touched on that because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, speculation. Are we going to get a new Xbox or a new PS4 at this E3 this year? And both companies have said no. But, you know, these development companies they're pushing the hell out of these current generation Xbox and PS3 systems. And I don't know how they keep doing it over and over again. Like, each game just looks so much better with the same hardware inside the box.
As far as PS3 goes, Jay Duvius, I really have to say I don't think I can see an Xbox maybe before a PS3 being upgraded to it, because there's so much more room that's capable out of that. I guarantee you there's more room.
Yes. I definitely agree with
also,
you.
Also with, you know, PlayStation Move and especially Kinect, I think they've tried to really extend the life of these consoles.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. So
I would love it. I mean, if they do, I'll be very, you know, hey, I'll be happy. But I don't see myself upgrading at all. I'm very happy with my PlayStation 3 the way it is right now, unless that means that, you know, I couldn't play any games on it, you know, for a bit, you know.
Yeah.
I'd upgrade in the future, but
I'd be fine with 2 years out of both my systems.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And plus, the PlayStation 3 has the built-in Blu-ray player, which is really kind of all you need for everything.
Definitely plus.
Yeah, right there in one spot. But do you want to talk about some images from Halo 4? I haven't even seen those.
That's right.
Yeah, I haven't either.
343 Industries and Microsoft, they released two new images of Master Chief. Now, a lot of people have already been getting a little pissed off because, like, oh, this is nothing new. It's the same old Master Chief. But if you really look at these current images and previous versions of the games, it's a lot more detailed look. The 343 Industries have taken over completely of the Halo franchise from Bungie, whose last game was Halo Reach, which was a great game, by the way. But now it's all them. It's all in-house at Microsoft now, and they've updated every single aspect of the game, from the guns to the vehicles to the settings. They've already said that each level is built from scratch. You know, nothing reused from previous games. They've even updated, like, that HUD display that you see. Like, when you're playing the game, you're looking at it from, you know, Master Chief's eyes inside the helmet. So they've even updated that HUD display somewhat. So they also released a behind-the-scenes trailer with the developers that showed off a little bit of the changes they were making. I'm really anxious to see this new game now. I mean, it's coming out this holiday season. No exact date yet, but I'm going to guess around November, if anything. Yeah. I think that's when Halo Reach came out, was around that time. So, yeah, that's about it for Halo.
Cool.
Now,
sweet.
JD, if you note, they're planning a new kind of trilogy, right?
Oh, exactly, yes. That's right. It's a brand new trilogy. No real details of what exactly that story is going to be. But the one thing they did say in that developer diary of sorts, they did say they were going to, you know, dive more into Master Chief's backstory and like more what makes him tick as, you know, a man. I guess, you know, get more on a character level with him, because you really don't see that in previous games. You just play as him. So that's going to be something different. And that's one they did. Halo Reach. Halo Reach had a great storyline. So I have to give Bungie props for that one. It was a great storyline. I connected with every single one of the players. If you haven't played the game, I'm about to spoil something for you, but some players die as you go on in the game. You kind of get hurt.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Man.
The book at Reach, it comes from a little bit, I think it's what, Fall of Reach?
Right.
It's a good book.
Cool.
Sweet.
All right, guys. Well, let's talk a little bit about what's coming up next week, or I guess next week. By that, I mean 2 days from now on Friday the 9th. We've got John Carter finally coming out from Disney. It seems like this one's been talked about ad nauseum for years on end, and it probably has. So we've got that one, and we've got Silent House, which is kind of a cool concept. It's supposedly real-time, 88 minutes. One long continuous shot through this kind of crazy, we don't know if it's haunted, we don't know if it's inhabited by somebody house. This movie stars Elizabeth Olsen, who's great, and Martha Marcy May Marlene, and she's kind of a Sundance darling these days. So that one comes out. I actually saw it. It's not very good, but hey, if you want to check it out, go for it. And then the new Eddie Murphy movie, 1,000 Words, comes out as well. So that one just seems like a ludicrous concept to me. But I guess that's all Eddie Murphy's doing these days, is just movies with ludicrous concepts.
Apparently that was on a shelf for a while.
Oh, really?
Power Heist was so good, though, man, compared to that. I know that I'm the only one that thinks that, but compared to that, that looks like crap.
All right. Cool. So I guess let's do some plugs for the other shows and things like that we're working on. So Tiberius, let's start with you.
Well, I have not recorded a podcast in a little bit. It's been we didn't do it this week. We're going to be doing it and doing some updates for South by Southwest, which is going on next week. And the team over at ScreenInnovation.com is going to be heading out to South by Southwest for that. So that should be cool. And we'll be covering that and hopefully getting that updated. But you can find that on ScreenInnovation.com/InvasionRadio for all of our podcasts there that we cover. Also, I just want to quickly do it. My wife will – I know this sounds crazy, and we don't normally do this, but I want to say happy birthday to my wife. Even though she doesn't listen, she needs to. She's 35, and I just wanted to say happy birthday just so that I can say that her birth. You know, I said happy birthday for her birthday this weekend. That way I'm in good graces. Thank you.
There you go. Man, you probably should have said that at the beginning of the podcast, not like an hour and 20 minutes in. But
That's okay. That's okay. That's okay.
Better late than never.
He will be sure to send his wife this.
Cool. And Tiberius also kind of curates the Geek Tyrant Daily newsletter, so you can find that at geektyrant.com/daily. I'm working on a Geek Tyrant Daily Roundup video series, so you can find that at geektyrant.tv. just kind of run through like the top five news stories of the day, depending on how much content is out there. You can like us on Facebook at geektire.com/Facebook. You can add us to your circles in Google Plus at geektire.com/Google, and then follow us on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Twitter.com/geektyrants. You can subscribe to this podcast for free in iTunes. I don't see any reason why you wouldn't do that, especially if you listen this far into this episode. Kind of know what you're getting into at this point. And you can also check out Jay Dubious and a lot of his work at GameTyrant.co. C-O, not those posers at GameTyrant.com. That is not real.
Yeah, you don't want to go to them.
Yeah,
we've tried to contact those guys, and they never contacted us back, so it's like, whatever.
That's cool. And
GameTyrant.co is perfect, man. It's better than .com. It's perfect.
Shorter.
Yeah, shorter.
Yeah, I like it.
It's like what's his name? Justin Timberlake said in The Social Network, drop the, you know, it's cleaner. Drop the M.
Yeah.
We don't need no stinking M.
Yeah. Yep. You guys can find my Not Just in Movies podcast hosted. I'm in the process of transferring all of those episodes and adding previous episodes of the podcast and stuff over to geektyrant.com. So you can find it there under the podcast section. You can subscribe to our new feed in iTunes. It's called GeekTyrant-NJNM, so you can find it there if you want for more of our kind of recent episodes. I'm going to work on changing the name back to the Not Just New Movies podcast in iTunes, try to get that all kind of squared away. But for those of you who are just desperate for it in iTunes and refuse to stream it from Geek Tyrant or NotJustNewMovies.com, you can find it in the new feed over there. So
I refuse.
Yeah, I know you do, Tiberius. I know a lot of people absolutely refuse. I think that's pretty much going to bring us to the end of this week's episode. So thanks everybody for listening. Thanks to Jay Dubious for stopping by. It was awesome having you on, sir.
I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here.
Yep. Hopefully we'll get back on for the next one. And if anybody have anything else real quick before we go? No? Everybody good?
No.
If you're going to WonderCon, hit us up.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Mazer, you and Venkman are going to be there, right?
Me, Venkman, and McMurphy are going to be there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Murphy. Cool. So you guys going to be rocking Geek Tyrant t-shirts for that?
We'll be rocking Geek Tyrant t-shirts. We'll be rolling Three Men Deep.
All right.
And we'll be the guys elbowing people.
There you go. All right, so look them up.
Yeah,
Connors. Cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see y'all next week.